people of Starship, Ro Concho with Anna DeBlantes, off for another broadcast day of insolence.
Happy Monday, and as of right now, Rosenstein has not resigned. Rosenstein? Frankenstein or Frankenstein? Which one
it
is it?
It used to be Stein, now it's Stein.
It's Stein.
Now,
it's
wait, Rosenstein. Yeah, that's right. Wasn't it Stein?
It was Stein, but it was never right.
It's Rosenstein.
We were all saying it wrong. And now it's Stein.
It's Rosenstein.
Because I was saying it Rosenstein, and everybody was correcting me initially. All right,
Frankenstein, Rosenstein.
Got it. Hasn't resigned, and he has not been fired as of this current press time.
Still, at this reading. Hold on, I'm just being told something right now.
By way of my telephone. No.
Brett Kavanaugh's wife is going to speak out on Fox tonight.
Hmm.
All right. We have
that. He said he is not going to bend to this. He says it's a coordinated smear campaign, and that he's not going to allow this to make him step aside.
I think Kavanaugh is also going to be on Fox. Kavanaugh and his wife, right?
Hmm.
Now it's going to be yes. Brett Kavanaugh and his wife. Oh, boy. Oh, that'll be interesting.
Very strange, but...
Yeah, well, this is not like... I am not in favor of anything that's happening in America right now, just period. I'd like a redo, like to start over. I'd like to move a few pieces around here and say I think this is a better way that we can move forward. But I happen to think Democrats are making a mistake here. I get what they're doing. They're angry. They're still angry about Merrick Garland. They're going to try anything they can to try to stop Brett Kavanaugh, and truth and justice in Washington has flown out the window. The last vestiges of it, the last scintilla of honor and decorum are gone from our political system, and the president is very much responsible for that. But I cannot speak to Dr. Ford and her, Dr. Blasey Ford, are we hyphenating? I don't even know. Mm-hmm. But I can't speak to what that whole incident was all about. I can tell you this, though. This other case that has just popped up that Democrats are going, whoa, look, see another one. The woman from Yale who was for the New Yorker piece,
right,
took a picture in a sweater with a Puerto Rico T-shirt underneath, which appears to be a political statement.
That's on her social media or something?
No, it's on the cover of the New Yorker.
I just read the article.
Is a picture of her standing in a field wearing a sweater, and it's got a Puerto Rico T-shirt underneath it. Now, if you're going to do that, you know you're going to be in the New Yorker store, and that's what it's going to be about. You're staking a political position there. It clearly is, right? Because there's no two ways around that. And she couldn't remember any details of this initially, and then after 6 days of trying to remember it and meeting with her lawyer, she has decided that this is what happened to her in Yale at apparently a kind of a wild fraternity-esque party.
Right.
I mean, Democrats want to pin it on this. It makes Democrats look as reckless as Republicans have looked in the last year. And that does not help. See, on CLTV, we're showing the picture now with the woman in the field, and she's wearing that, and it's like it's clearly political for her.
Yeah, I think the hardest part about this one is that the New Yorker picked it up. The New York Times decided not to, mostly for the reason that they couldn't find the other eyewitnesses who were there, or the other people named to be at the Yale freshman year party where he supposedly exposed himself, and she was forced to touch it because she was that close, and it was part of this drunken kind of party atmosphere. They couldn't confirm that Kavanaugh was even present at this party. And the only way she was able to confirm that it was Kavanaugh is because someone screamed down the hall, "You let Brett Kavanaugh do that to you," but really said what it was. And if you can't confirm that other people who would have been witnesses, it's a party, there's more than two people there, it would be good to get that kind of confirmation before going
a drunken party, so that's
it's even harder.
Starting from a harder place,
harder
place.
Right. I mean, if the real question here is Brett Kavanaugh a serial abuser of women? That's the question that the Senate has to answer before they vote on him, right? And do the sum total of these two allegations make you believe that Brett Kavanaugh is disrespectful and a serial abuser of women? to me, now I'm a guy, I'm a middle-aged white guy, so I'm like, you know, I whatever I say here is going to be seen through that lens. But I just don't know that it is enough to take a guy as, I don't want Brett Kavanaugh on the Supreme Court, but I don't think this is fair. I don't think this is a fair way to take a guy off the Supreme Court. And I wouldn't want Republicans doing it to Democrats. And I'm neither. But I wouldn't want this to be the way. I don't want my American politics to be based on these kinds of you know, scarlet letter kinds of trials. And I know that we go back. You know, what's amazing? Have you seen the video? In the last couple of days, they've been pulling out the video from the Anita Hill testimony, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
In the Clarence Thomas thing from 1991.
Yeah.
Sort of the patient zero of all of this.
Right.
And you and her testimony, so detailed. This was as an adult. This was going on in a workplace. And now you're seeing all these executives, mostly from entertainment companies, you know, going down on all of this. Pardon the expression. And what's happening? Right. And that's and now you see that would make sense. This takes it to another level of this happened at a drunken party in high school.
Freshman
or this happened
year of college.
Right. In a dorm situation in college. And you're like, and then I mean, anybody who's been a freshman, had a drink and been in a dorm. You've seen some stuff.
You've seen
friend.
Some stuff. That's for sure. You have. And the fact that you can't quite place him there, even though it was, again, a party. I think that makes it tough, that yeah. the second
this
one. Now, they say that
enough.
Avenatti's got a third one.
Oh,
and who knows
sake.
What this guy's doing. But you're right. There's something about this one that...
This doesn't seem right to me. Sorry. And I want to stand up for American values. And I also want to stand up for, you know, people being able to confront their accusers and getting a fair trial in a situation like this. And I hope Brett Kavanaugh feels the same way. Because I think he's going to be a Supreme Court justice, one way or the other.
You do.
But then when a bunch of flatulent old white guys you know, are sitting around going, he's going to be a Supreme Court justice, don't you worry about it. You know, I don't feel good about that either. I don't feel good about anything. Mike Monaco's here.
Good. I feel good about that. Mm-hmm. That's heartening.
And he'll be joining us in this. Do you have any legal, would you like to flourish that with anything, a legal sentence?
Well, Ronan Farrow's been pretty good about picking up stories like this.
He has been.
Yeah, but what's the story? But again,
he's got this story out of the New Yorker, so.
But he did, you know, to be fair, Ronan Farrow has been an excellent reporter on this issue.
Yeah.
But he even says in his article in the New Yorker that two of the classmates who are said to have been involved by the woman involved in this, Ramirez, that they don't remember anything like this happening. And they said not only that, but. They would have known about it if it happened even outside their presence. Two of them, or at least one of them, was a roommate, not just a classmate.
Why did he go with the story then?
Because he felt as if she was going to be coming out anyway, and that she was getting a lot of pressure on her mm-hmm. to reveal this, and he wanted to put out her what she had to say.
And New York and Times did not take this story. New York Times right. offered this story, and they did not take it because they couldn't source it properly.
Right. And now Avenatti is in the news.
Oh, okay. Don't bring him up.
Well, you right, say...
Hold on. I got to...
He's been right, too, pretty much.
Ben Bradley. Okay. Well, sort of.
Yeah.
Not 100%. Well. But he knows what he's got with Stormy and Trump and all that.
Yeah.
And he knows what he had with Cohen. He knew what he had with all of
and
that.
And he kind
of
knows what's going on here, too, let's be honest.
Sort of.
How does he know about this?
Well,
where
he was at the DNC convention here in Chicago, right?
Where does he know about this?
Well, he's linked into this process.
Okay. Yeah, I know. But see, it's a political process. I like it when it's not a political. I like it when people go, hey, whoa, this guy did
right.
this back then. And yeah. it's not, I'm doing this because I'm a Democrat and I got to stop this guy one way or the other.
Although it's funny you talk about fairness.
The Republicans were totally unfair yes. about Merrick Garland.
This is turnabout.
But I didn't like that. I don't like this. I want my America back. When do I get it back? When do I talk to Ben Bradley? Right after Judy Pilon tells us what's happening at the bottom
back.
Of the hour.
Thank God.
Oh, God.
A tense first day for the defense in the Jason Van Dyke murder trial.
Then there's this. Watch Micah and Joe, Micah Mater and Joe Donlin, weeknights on WGN TV News at 9 o'clock.
Ben Bradley joins us right now from the WGN TV newsroom, where he's going to be hosting the 4 o'clock. And then what else?
And the 5 and 6 today.
Oh.
Yes. Joe has another obligation early evening, so I'll be piloting the SS WGN for 3 hours this evening.
I am aware of his obligation.
Yes.
What's that?
He is,
can we talk about
he
it?
Is, yes. He is hosting the Emmy nominations party.
Nice.
For the Midwest.
So bring your money in brown envelopes.
Yeah.
We're going to teach him the Chicago way.
It was so funny. I was asked to attend that event tonight by my TV colleagues. And they're like, oh, we're all going over. And I'm like, I don't want to be there. And when they get to my category, when I don't get nominated, it's one thing not to win.
Right.
Because you don't even get to say it's just an honor to be nominated. Uh-huh. And it's like, and I'm like, I don't think I want to be there when I'm not nominated.
Is it an honor to not be nominated?
No, it is not an honor to not be nominated.
No, I guess not.
Well, and it isn't amazing that they have a party to announce the nominations as opposed to a party for the winners.
Right.
Like true.
It's the pre-party.
Yeah. So he's announcing it, but it's a big deal.
Yeah, everybody comes out. It's always a good time.
Yeah.
So, hey, you guys were just talking about Brett Kavanaugh and the strategy unfolding. We're just getting word that he is sitting down right now for an interview with Fox News that will air this evening. And he's sitting down with his wife.
Right. Just mention that.
Yes.
Who's doing the interview, though?
Martha McCallum.
Oh, all right.
So interesting, though, because doesn't that show the strategy is more to rally the base, to prop up support among the loyal and the faithful, as opposed to, you know, doing an interview with a network that reaches the undecided.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if Martha asks, well, is it possible that you don't remember this? Any of these things? Did you do a lot of drinking in high school and in college?
Yeah.
Were you a roughhouser?
Or did you use alcohol to try to lower your inhibitions? And do you think it's possible? I mean, those are the kinds of questions. She tends to be one of the fairer reporters, of course, people over there at Fox, I would say.
So it'll be interesting to see if we get to that.
Yeah, and just the fact that he feels he has to do an interview like this, because that's fairly unprecedented. Normally, you know, in this process, it's very scripted, very controlled. The nominee speaks to senators. He has private meetings with leaders, and that's it. They're doing everything in their power, normally, in most cases, to minimize outside exposure. So sitting down for a TV interview, but just as important, doing it with his wife, which I think, you know, either optically or in reality, kind of diminishes the types of questions you can ask.
That's true. Can I ask you a tough question, Ben? The New York Times passed on this second woman who came forward, Ramirez, right? Deb Ramirez.
Right.
And the New Yorker picked it up. Ronan Farrow, who's been out front on a lot of these. Is that a choice you think you would have made, given?
Keep in mind, you know, Mitch McConnell on the floor of the Senate today said, oh, even the New York Times wouldn't run it.
They get the great irony of a Republican standing up for the New York Times.
Yeah. For the first time in how long?
That tells you they're doing a good job.
It was over the weekend, Donald Trump Jr. was, you know, tweeting, look at this New York Times article about Rod Rosenstein. So, you know, they kind of pick and choose when they like the failing New York Times. Allegedly failing, I guess I should say.
Actually, the exact opposite. The New York Times has never been more flush than they are right now.
Oh, digital subscriptions especially through the roof. But anyway, we're sidetracked here. So you asked, you know, did the New York Times pass on it? Or had they not yet reported it out to a point that they felt comfortable going with it?
They couldn't get confirmation of the eyewitnesses who were at that party who she said were involved. So they went to those people, and some of them refuted that they were involved or refuted that they ever saw anything like this.
Right. So that tells you that they didn't have enough to go with the story. Does that tell you that the story didn't happen?
No. It doesn't.
But it tells you they didn't feel comfortable, and that is the balancing test that not only journalists do, but senators will have to do here, right? Because Brett Kavanaugh is not going to come out and say, yes, this happened, and the accuser who's going to testify says it did happen. At some point, it's about who do you believe more, or at what point does it become so much of a distraction that they just don't want to see him. There was a report I saw today that suggested President Trump was beginning to see Brett Kavanaugh as a distraction, but
from his firing of Rod Rosenstein.
Well,
fires he's setting daily.
I can't do it. By the way, I've also got to announce I'm leaving the UN. I've got that this week. Yeah. Where that goes?
But let's not forget we're on the clock here, guys, because we are 6 weeks or so away from an election, which could dramatically change Republicans' ability to get a justice that they like on the Supreme Court.
Well, no, but even before that, we're on the clock. October 1st, they need to get him confirmed by October 1st so he can sit in this session and start to hear cases that are arriving in front of the court on October 1st. So
very, very good point.
Yeah. So it's even before that. So we'll have to see. All right. Thank you, Ben.
We'll see
it tonight at 4, 5, 6, 9, 10, 12, and 14.
Sounds good. Hey, good luck tonight with the nomination of the nomination for an Emmy, Ro.
Yeah.
I know there'll be a huge celebration back at your place tonight if you're even nominated.
It is just, remember this, Ben, it is just an honor to be nominated.
Rokon, the Susan Lucci of local television.
Yes. Yes, that's exactly right.
You should show up in disguise, Ro. Like one of those mustache and nose and eyeglass things.
I was going to sit back there. I was going to take Kevin, sit back there and go, hey, there's Joe Donnelly, big buddy. Hey, Joe, how are you doing, my boy?
The best is going to be next year when, like, Roquan Smith gets an award for some, you know, Bears broadcast he does, and Ro jumps up.
Yeah, I'll take that.
Yes! No! Not me!
Roquan.
Right. Thank you. Thank you, Ben. Judy Pilak standing by. She's got the WGN News. It's award-winning. She wins all the awards. I never win anything. VictoryAutoWreckers.com is her sponsor.
There was no sound in that video, right?
Correct.
You have no idea how many shots were fired before he hit the ground, correct?
No, but I know how many shots struck him. And I know which of the shots could have possibly struck him after he was on the ground. Because they would have a different pattern. They would not be on certain parts of his body because his body was down.
Right. But again, you can't give us any kind of sequence, right?
I can't give you any sequence excepting what I've already given you.
That is testimony from a former county pathologist, now a forensic pathologist for trial work and other things, who is testifying today in the Jason Van Dyke trial. And Mike Monaco is in studio with us, and Eric Rung is with us, and Eric Rung was in the courtroom today. And let's just talk about that testimony first. She was on the stand, and it's interesting. It's stuff that we haven't necessarily heard before.
No, she was on the stand for 3 hours today, too. Shakutiz is her name. And basically what she was saying is that, in her opinion, Laquan McDonald was standing for most of the shots that hit him. She believes that it was either the first or second shot that Laquan took into the chest that likely killed him, and he would have been dead within 1 to 5 minutes, is what she said. And she said the other wounds were superficial, is how she described them, and that she could only for certain say that Laquan McDonald was hit twice while he was on the ground. Now, the prosecution came back very quickly, and it was very contentious between the doctor and the prosecution in this case. Basically, she went through every single one of those shots and said, shot number one, did that cause an injury to Laquan McDonald? The doctor said yes. How about shot number two? Yes. All the way through all 16 of them, and also got her to basically say she didn't know if which shot actually killed her, because she couldn't tell the order of the bullet. So if it was the first or second shot, there's really nothing that is in the reports that would suggest that she would know that.
There was an important point, too, that she said that in order for those initial bullets to hit him, that Laquan McDonald's shoulders had to be turned toward the officer, toward the gun.
Yeah, that was another contentious point in the testimony, too, today, because she said that, in order, just like you said, his shoulders, his torso, is how she said it, had to be facing Jason Van Dyke when he took that shot. And then that got into quite a bit of an argument between the prosecution and the defense witness there, too. Basically, it was a definition of what straight on is. And the doctor said she could not tell definitively if Laquan McDonald had squared his shoulders to face Laquan. All she would say is that his torso was turned.
Mm-hmm. How impacting is that, Mike Monaco?
Well, it's important because it's a question of whether the officer was at risk or was anyone else at risk. And so they're making a big deal out about this because Van Dyke's partner, Walsh, said that he felt that he and Van Dyke were at risk. He said even after Laquan fell to the ground that there was a risk. So,
what do you think that when he says that this pathologist says that one or two of the shots struck him, only one or two of them struck him when he was on the ground? The video, when you watch it, doesn't seem to show that to most people. And I don't know how you jive those two things.
Yeah, it contradicts what we've all seen on the video. But she stuck to her guns when the state was pressing her hard, or special prosecutors were pressing her hard And she also said that the Cook County Medical Examiner that did the initial autopsy didn't do a thorough job. She complained about there not being enough photographs and not dissecting the bullet tracks. And she said, so again, the information that she was kind of talking about being missing is also some of the information she used to come up with her opinions. Mm-hmm. At least that's the way it seemed in the courtroom.
This was not a second autopsy.
No, there's only one autopsy.
There's only one autopsy. And so she has to go with whatever data was available to both sides here, which is the county data.
Right. Similarly, the prosecution's witness was not the person who performed the autopsy.
But it's just the record of the autopsy that they're working on. It's one record.
Right.
There's not a second autopsy in a case like we saw.
There's one record, to be fair to the coroner who did it, at the time he did it, nobody was thinking it was going to be a murder. They were thinking this is a fellow who passed.
It was a police shooting.
A police shooting.
Yeah. All right. Who else was on the stand today?
So then the defense called three witnesses, all had to do with their jobs at the Cook County juvenile system, whether they be in the Cook County Juvenile Courthouse or whether they be in the Juvenile Detention Center. And basically what they were testifying to was that they had interactions with Laquan McDonald when he was 15 and 16 years old. Some were physical altercations with Laquan. But the prosecution came back and said, well, did you ever talk to Jason Van Dyke about this? And, of course, the answer is no. Did you ever tell Jason Van Dyke what Laquan McDonald did when he was 16 years old? And the answer was no. And, of course, what they were trying to prove is that Jason Van Dyke would have no idea who was walking down that street that day.
And, Mike, you told me before that all this kind of stuff is irrelevant, but it's just irrelevant in terms of...
There's a law, Illinois law, that allows it in. And so that's why it's in, because they can put it in.
The history of the person?
Yes.
The judge also admonished
but without Jason Van Dyke knowing the history of the person.
Right. Without any requirement that the prosecution or the defense prove that the defendant had knowledge, that is to say, Officer Van Dyke had knowledge as to the prior history of the victim.
Here is what a little of that sounded like.
We gave him standard directives, basically, which is to remain on your bed. Attempted to get him to calm down, and I began removing the mechanical restraints from him.
Okay, so you began removing the handcuffs after he was placed on the bed?
Correct.
Okay. So he's face down. Were you able to remove both handcuffs?
So I removed the first handcuff. Upon removing the second handcuff, he pushed up off his bed and said, "I'm going to f*** y'all up."
Yeah. So he was a troubled young man. We know this. But he's not on trial.
No. No. Well, that's, that's the truth. He's not on trial. But in terms of defending the case, the defense lawyers want to put him on trial. To show that, for whatever reason, that he was walking down the street that day with a knife in his hand, he was not intending to do good things.
What is a lawyer hoping to say to a jury? What are they hoping the jury takes away from testimony like that?
They're hoping the jury takes away from this that this was a person who had nothing but bad intentions in his mind. And that's what the officers face every day on the street. And that in a situation like this, police act right away, immediately, and they often, have to decide whether or not to use their
deadly force
or not. Yeah. And that's what they chose to do here.
Do you think Van Dyke will take the stand? Will the defense put him up there so people on the jury can hear what was going through his mind, why he did what he did?
That's a very good question. It's the toughest question in cases like this. There are two questions. One, bench or jury. Here they decide a jury. Second question, does the defendant testify or not? And it's always a difficult decision, because if you put the defendant on the stand, then it sort of minimizes all the other evidence, because the jury's going to decide, do they believe the defendant or not? If you don't put on the defendant on the stand, then normally the defense lawyers tell the jury, look at all the evidence in this case. Look at all the prosecution's evidence. That is not significant enough to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that there was an intention to murder.
All right, stand by, everybody. We're going to talk to John Cass, who's outside the courtroom today, talking to protesters about what that looks like from outside the courtroom. But first, Judy, what's coming up at the top of the hour?
The flu making a comeback. Time to get that vaccination.
Second Van Dyke, you're from the jail.
All right, that's some of the protest out in front of the courtroom at 26th in California today. Jason Van Dyke on trial for murder in the shooting of Laquan McDonald. Jason Van Dyke, of course, a Chicago police officer. John Cass of the Chicago Tribune was out in front talking to protesters today. We also have Mike Monaco and Eric Rung in the studio with us as we're covering this for both WGN Radio and CLTV. And John, it's interesting. There have been a lot of discussion over the last couple of weeks about the protests and what would happen if Jason Van Dyke is found not guilty of first-degree murder. And I think one of the questions that is asked here that comes up is, you know, will the city go up for grabs? You're talking to protesters. What are they saying about the potential for that?
I don't know. They're kind of playing the game. You know, give us a conviction or maybe that'll happen, but I don't think the protesters are the, you know, like Bishop Westside or Brother Westside playing RB music in his microphone while he's shouting is not going to be one of those who lead it. You know, there was a protest, street protest a few months ago. A barber was shot on the south side, and that became by police, and it turned out that the barber Rowe was armed and he was reaching for a weapon when he was shot, and still people threw rocks and bottles at cops. So who can say, you know? Who can really say? Is it a threat? Is it part of the deal, the larger political deal, that Dyke goes down and no unrest? Now with Rahm out, I don't know. Now that Rahm's gone or pulled the plug, I don't know if maybe the balloon, you know, popped a little bit. I don't really know.
Did you see those kinds of signs? Because it seemed like during some of the protests earlier, they were asking Rahm Emanuel to resign and things like that. Are those signs still around there? Are they asking many politicians to leave office? Or
some of them are running for office now. You know, Jamal Green is running for mayor.
Oh, that's right.
I thought the most interesting thing was when I went into the courtroom and I listened to some of the testimony, but walking up, there was a lawyer in a black Lexus. It was new, like never washed in a machine wash, always by hand. And he's in a beautiful suit, kind of like the kind Monica wears to court.
Oh, beautiful suits.
And he was a big Rolex, and he's smoking a cigar. You know, smoke is coming out of the sunroof. And he waves to me. And it made quite a picture. And I said, hey, you better call Saul. And he goes, damn right you better call Saul. And he was Irish. And I thought, this is Cook County Court right here. This is it.
You did paint quite a picture of what it feels and looks like around 26th Street. There's no question about that. It's a festival always of interesting types. But in terms of what you're seeing outside the courtroom, and you know, outside the court building itself, I'm getting a sense that the protests aren't quite as robust. I think that's the term people like to use now.
Good,
as they originally thought they were going to be. I'm not sure there is a ton of energy here because, as you point out, I think because Rahm Emanuel is no longer mayor, Gary McCarthy is not the police chief, and Anita Alvarez is not the state's attorney, who were the three people that everybody was like, hey, what's going on here?
Right. Mm-hmm.
At this time.
Who do you ask for?
And we'll just have to see what happens here. And I think even there are people who are demanding that justice be a conviction here.
Right.
But I think it might be a conviction of anything. I don't know that it'll be a conviction of murder one.
Roe, that's why you charge a guy 16 times with aggravated battery, you know?
Right.
Because they're going to get him on something. Are they going to get him on first-degree murder? No, I don't know, you know? Yeah. Will it be something else? Will he serve some time? I think, you know, just gut feeling. I'm not a lawyer, but gut feeling, politically, that seems to be where it's going.
All right. John Cass, thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Beautifully, built
really
picture of words
picture.
Right there. And that was not, by the way, that is not Mike Monaco because he doesn't smoke cigars. Isn't that correct?
That's right. Thank you.
It would mess up his beautiful suits.
Thank you very much.
Yes, but you have had a Lexus, though. So
that's true.
Yeah, so I'm not quite sure if that is you or that's not you. All right. All right, we got it. All right, Michael, thank you very much. Mike Monaco, attorney at law.
Thank you. Thank you, Anna.
And,
thanks,
of course, Eric, thank you. And you'll be in the courtroom again tomorrow?
Yep, I'll be there.
All right, we'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Sounds good.
We'll talk to both of you tomorrow. Coming up, the stories that matter with Judy Palak from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on 720 WGN Radio. Mr. Tom Skilling is joining us, being brought to us by Permaseal Basement Systems.
Hello, Ro.
Hello, Tom.
Hi,
hello,
Tom.
Anna. How are you guys?
Oh.
Did you have an absolutely spectacular weekend?
Oh, it was spectacular like you've never... There was no
really?
Spec. It was just all-tacular. Uh-huh. It was...
Well, the Bears did well, so I knew
yes. I still am complaining.
There's some complaining about that anyway. But
I was
happy.
Just complaining to Kevin about it a few minutes ago before the show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you know what? I got problems. Because, you know, even Hamp, OB, and Kaz, uh-huh. they know the show that's on after the Bears
yes,
game.
I do.
On 720
yes.
WGN.
Yeah, great
yes.
show.
Yeah, it is a great
they
show.
Get,
they don't mince any words.
No, they don't. They get angry. And yes. they were angry yesterday after the win. And I got, and people were like, hey, dude, chill
take
out.
Take it. Take
it's
it.
A win. And I'm like, I want to be, I'm just, I have my own fear. I have, I have Trubisky mm-hmm. Turbulation right now. And I'm worried about him.
Well, they're in first place, Ro, and the offense can only get better if that makes you feel
anything. Right.
That is true.
There you
now,
go, Kevin.
First
that's
place.
Good.
Can the defense get any better?
When's the last time? Can I
don't know. That's a nasty
oh,
defense.
Oh, my God. That is it, filthy. That's what they are. They're filthy.
Ferocious.
They're filthy. What, may I ask you this question? When was the last time the Bears won twice in September?
We talked about this Thursday. I believe it was 2014. First wow. time they had a winning record through September, I believe, was 2013. And it's okay. the first time wow. they're in first place
in the NFC
since 2000.
How long ago has it been, Kevin, five, since they were in first place?
Almost
it,
full 5 years. Wow. 2013, week 16, was the last time they had first in this in the
yeah.
division.
That's
nice.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so, then how many coaches have we had since 2013?
Like 100.
How many quarterbacks? Oh, no, just a
million. Well, it was mostly Cutler, yeah.
yeah, mostly.
You know, has Coach Fox commented on this?
I haven't heard from Coach Fox.
I don't know. I'm sitting back here waiting.
Just looking for Gidget.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, did you have to bring that up, Cal?
It's a very traumatic.
Sorry, Coach.
The monkey that died.
Gidget.
Pet monkey. Very traumatic. But Khalil Mack should be running for mayor, or we should all write him in, because I think he could win at this point. He is so exciting. It's so exciting to have him on this team.
Yeah, because yeah. he's constantly in the play. They literally put three guys on him yesterday on one play, and he still finds his way to be an impact because other guys are getting free where they shouldn't be. I'm still a little worried about the secondary. I'm still not seeing exactly what, you know, those kind of like lockdown cornerbacks that all the great championship teams have. But I don't want to complain anything about the defense at all. They have been a lot of fun to watch. And tonight, you know, you get to see on Monday Night Football, you get to see. I'm going to be watching the Rod Rosenstein show and the Brett Kavanaugh show tonight.
Yeah.
But I'll zip through the football game tonight because uh-huh. it's important because they're playing here at Soldier Field on one day less rest
yeah.
are the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on Sunday. So that's going to be something, my friends.
Now, speaking of the Rod Rosenstein show,
yes. Mm-hmm.
What do you think's going to happen at Ro Thursday? He's still in, I guess.
Yeah. Now, here, there's new information coming in right now because the White House opened up a second front here on Rosenstein right when they're trying to get Kavanaugh across the line.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to shorten up. They went down to short passes here. I'm going to use the football analogy here.
Okay.
They decided to shorten up their offense and just try to get a first down here on Kavanaugh.
Very nice.
And what they're doing
that was a football.
And that's basically what they're doing because they're now saying, hey, this is all political, all the accusations are political. They're just going to try to push through Rosenstein. They're going to give Dr. Ford her due here, an opportunity to say some things. Now, the question is that on camera? We're not, I have not seen that anywhere, that's actually going to be an open testimony.
It hasn't been made clear yet at this point.
Wow, I just presumed it was going to be. No?
I don't know that it is.
Wow.
So they're
going to
let her have her say. The question is, if it's not an open, does that mean anything? And then the Senate's going to vote. I think the Senate's just going to get it across the line. I think you had Mitch McConnell say that earlier today. I think that's going to happen. And then after that's done, then they're going to fire Rosenstein.
Now, let me ask you something, Ro. At this point in time, with multiple accusers...
And hold on. And
yeah.
let me just finish the sentence
yeah.
here. And after Rosenstein, Trump's attorneys, Jay Sekulow, just came out and said, once Rosenstein is gone, there may be time for a timeout on the Mueller investigation. I'm going to let that sink in.
Yeah. Well, at what point does an FBI reopening of an investigation at all this with make sense? Yeah. I mean, it would.
And what is there? I mean, does the FBI, can they get called in to finish a background check? That seems appropriate. Or to pursue a lead on a background check? Maybe. It's very hard, though. It's, I mean, what the FBI can actually add to this in terms of.
Well, couldn't they talk to some of the new accusers and at least
there's one new accuser, by the way.
One, yes. And that the what
Avenatti has Avenatti, said that he has another one who's prepared to come forward.
So, couldn't they at least establish the veracity of the charge or the non-veracity of it? You know,
I think it would be really hard to establish veracity. Period. Here, because it does appear to be a he said she said. At least let's just go with the one charge that we can at this juncture. That we know more about.
The Blasey Ford situation.
In which she, you know, it has some specificity to it. She knows approximately the time, although where the party was exactly seems to be in question.
Right.
Now, Kavanaugh, for his part, let's play this now, since we're talking about it, Brian. Let's play the Fox just released a piece of audio here from Martha McCallum's sit-down with Judge and Mrs. Kavanaugh. This just happened within the last few minutes.
Did you guys ever look at each other and say, I'm out. This is enough. This is just isn't worth it.
I'm not going to let false accusations drive us out of this process. And we're looking for a fair process where I can be heard and defend my integrity, my lifelong record of promoting dignity and equality for women, starting with the women who knew me when I was 14 years old. I'm not going anywhere.
Okay.
So he's standing firm.
That's his answer to all of this. Now, and the problem is the lack of specificity, not only, and it appears that Dr. Blasey Ford's testimony is more specific than the new accuser that has just now been named in the New Yorker piece.
Deborah Merez, yes.
And I think that that is going to the idea that this is political, especially in Deborah Ramirez's case, is going to make it harder, not easier, for Democrats to hold their position.
Why do you think that?
Because there's very little specificity to the case. She also did not, the New York Times didn't take that because for 6 days she couldn't name exactly when it happened and name other people that were around this, and then after spending time, you know, trying to piece it back together with her attorney, she came forward. And I hate to keep going back to this, but the fact that she posed in a picture wearing a Puerto Rico shirt for this story makes us think, it gives us the immediate sense that that politics are in her mind about this, right? Because Puerto Rico, for good reason, is a political touchstone right now.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah,
that was a poor choice of
clothing.
Point in time.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, and why'd she wear it? Well, why did Melania wear that thing?
Right, yeah. Exactly. Right.
I mean, but it says she's trying to tell us something by doing that. And what she's trying to tell us is that she's not on Team Trump, which is fine. That's all well and good. And maybe she isn't. And maybe part of the reason that she's not is because of Kavanaugh. But all of a sudden it's like, all right, is this purely political? And is this payback for Republicans? I think unethically not allowing a vote on a Supreme Court judge by Barack Obama.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, there seems to be some of that at play, certainly within the system. I think the hardest part about her story, not Blasey Ford, Ramirez, the second woman to come forward, is that the people she identified who were at that party, the others that were involved, have all been contacted. And even Ronan Farrow in his New Yorker piece said, we not only don't remember Brett Kavanaugh doing this, but we don't even recall that party or the fact that he was there. They can't even place him in that position.
Right. So I think that's and then it just seems nakedly political. And if it's nakedly political, then it become and it is. And I don't like what's happening here, period. I just don't. I'm uncomfortable with what is happening in America from a Washington perspective and from a political perspective, that it seems like the truth no longer has a place. That facts no longer have a place. Their facts only apply to your tribe. If your tribe says it, it is true. If your tribe decries it, it is false. And that is not, that is just not right. And that is another warning sign about a decay in a culture. And the fish rots from the capital back, right? If you look at all of the great empires that have been lost, right? They lose from their capital back. And this is a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a strange time. That's
for sure. It's a bad
time.
It's a bad time. And I'm not a gigantic fan of Kavanaugh, and I am concerned about some of the politics of, you know, whether the Supreme Court will be more political, and then you know the Roe versus Wade thing is going to be sent back to the states. It's going to be a firestorm, and there's going to be all kinds of other things that happen there. And now not only are people being pitted against each other along the lines of by both sides, of late by Republicans pitting Americans versus new immigrants versus, you know, are those immigrants legal? Are they illegal? Are they new? What are they doing here? And now this whole change that they want to make in terms of immigration status and refugee status and those kinds of things. If you're a new immigrant, you're not going to be considered for social services, things like that. And if you're a refugee, are you going to be considered eligible for social services when you get here, leaving a war-torn country? As you're getting your, you know, feet underneath you, mm-hmm. What's going to happen there? There's a lot of real, like, in detail kind of things happening here that need to be addressed. But once you are done with all of that, now we're getting to the point where we're pitting men against women. And Democrats have been doing it, and the Me Too movement to some degree does it, and now this doubles down on it, and we're just getting further and further torn apart, and it's really to the benefit of our strategic enemies throughout the world.
Yeah. It's
a point. Fair point.
Yeah, it is a fair point. Yeah.
The divisiveness does not help.
Yeah. Makes me glad I watched the atmosphere that's going to do what it does, you know?
I know, right?
Science, right?
There's nothing you can do about it.
I've never heard anybody assign a political label to a storm or a high pressure, you know, at this
point.
Well,
but they do now, though, right?
We've seen a little bit of that,
actually. You see that? Even
that's
political.
You don't have to be part of that.
Well, if you get into the climate debate, yeah, it starts sounding political, but it's actually a scientific.
I'll tell you what drives me craziest.
Yeah.
I mean, I just want to watch my football game. I want to be excited about this. And God forbid somebody takes a knee, and then all of a sudden there's a fight, and there's people in the room going, hey, look at that. I'm like, no, I just want to watch football. And I don't care what kind of shoes the guy's wearing.
It's true. You just want to make fun of Tom Brady. Poor Tom Brady.
Yeah.
I'm so happy that he lost
yesterday. I am happy that he lost.
That's what kind of mean-spirited person you are.
I'm happy that Belichick lost.
See, Anna, isn't this nice? He can can discuss very quietly and intelligently, mm-hmm. you know, these political issues that are unfolding. But now,
Watch out.
He gets into football, and that's it. This is where the pot comes off the pressure cooker.
I want Khalil Mack to lead me. I don't care what he does.
Yeah.
Khalil, you know what he is? He's like it's like from Game of Thrones. He's the original Khal. I want to give him Khaleesi. I want him to marry the mother of all dragons.
Sure.
That's what I would like to see happen here. Yeah. All right. I got to run.
All right.
This has been a great session.
Is it going to be rainy for a couple of days here or no?
No. Look, there could be a little drizzle and haze tonight, tomorrow morning, and a thunderstorm late tomorrow evening. And then the rest of the week, just seasonably cool and quiet. This week will average about 20 degrees cooler than last. So, and the lake temps are starting down. So, you know, they're just real signs of autumn around that. So it's a beautiful time of the year.
Yeah, Drizzle and Haze was a radio team here a number of years ago.
Years ago. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
All right, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Okay, Rose.
Thanks, Adam.
Bye, Anna.
All right, we keep doing those jokes over and over and over again, and they just really do get old. All right, let's check in with Judy. What's coming up at the bottom of the hour in the newsroom?
In Wakanda, a car full of blood, a body in a cornfield.
On November 6th, you have the power to influence the course of politics. Follow the most comprehensive local political news online, chicagotribune.com/midterms.
Coming up after 6 o'clock, a chance to win a pair of tickets, see the Blackhawks home opener Sunday, October 7th. We're under 2 weeks now. That's going to be a 6 o'clock Sunday night start, taking on the Toronto Maple Leafs, an Original Six team. Show up early for an Original Six matchup to catch Blackhawks players walking the red carpet. Special pregame ceremony honoring Hawks legend Stan Mikita.
Nice.
It's coming up a little bit later on. Your chance to rip us off for tickets all week long. We've got those right here on the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis.
Mm-hmm.
Judy Pilak has the WGN News coming your way, too. Hot Chat with Anna DeBlanche is right here on 720 yes. WGN. I'm so excited and disappointed all at the same time.
Why,
I don't know what to do with myself.
About what?
I'm just excited about Chicago Bears football for the first time in many years.
Oh, first place.
We're number one in the division.
Sort of.
Kind of in the division.
Because there was a tie. Because and because the new union contract specifies that you have to have a shorter overtime period, there are more ties now in the NFL than there really
there
should be.
We're number one.
Why don't they have... Can I just stop on football for 1 second here? Why do they not have in the NFL, and I blame Roger Goodell for everything, why do they not have the same overtime rules that they have in college football?
I wish they did.
Some don't like the college overtime.
Who doesn't like it?
I've heard people.
What, there's traditionalists in football? Every year, the rules of football change dramatically.
But I just think it's bad, rough on fans when there's a tie.
Yeah, ties are no fun. They rarely happen, though, although we've seen, what, two already this season?
Yes.
I agree. I would love to see the college one or some sort of form of that be put in place because, ties are no good. Ties are no good, and they're only
going to
shorten that down the road.
And it's just like when you played like sandlot ball when you were a kid. You know, the field's 25 yards long. Right. You basically got four downs to get maybe you got four downs to get past the tree.
Right.
And then once you get past the tree, then, you know, the stop sign is and let's hope at the cul-de-sac, let's hope he doesn't actually go in. and then you know everybody knows exactly where the touchdown is, even though there's no line on the ground.
Well, where is it? It's over there. You know.
You'll know it. Oh, yeah. No, it's good. And then losers walk. It's like the exact same plan as we had as kids, and it was great.
It was,
you know, the concern for the Bears, I get it, the offense, it has not looked good. I do think it's going to get better. It's a new offensive scheme. It's going to take time. I will say this too, right now I know it's week three, but man, Aaron Rodgers was limping from play number one with that left knee. Let's see how much he actually plays, plus a huge blow to their defense. Mo Wilkerson, a big defensive tackle, likely done for the year. He had a gruesome ankle injury yesterday. Ugh. So things not looking good for the Packers and the Vikings. What happened there? You just got destroyed by the Buffalo Bills and a rookie quarterback.
Right. And the Buffalo Bills had a guy quit in the middle of the game last week because he hates the team so much.
That was strange.
So I think I think that's what did it. I think the Buffalo Bills had something to prove.
And they put the rookie in, and we've seen this week. Look, Baker Mayfield led the Browns to their first victory Thursday night.
Man, that was huge. But then you got the Lions there that picked off the Patriots. Like, that seems like maybe it was a fluke.
Yeah, for a moment there, it looked like the NFC North was just going to have a really, really bad week. Then the Bears squeak out a victory, and then the Lions take it to the Patriots in Monday Night Football, because this is a division many thought was maybe the best in all of football.
And didn't the Patriots just lose, offensive coordinator or defensive coordinator to the Lions?
Yeah, well, the defense coordinator, Matt Patricia, is now the head coach of the Detroit Lions.
Right.
So there's a lot of hugging going on after that game with the Zach Brown-looking guy. Is that
That's Patricia, yes. We always call him Patricia. I'm like, who's the girl? Wait, no, that's the guy with the beard. Why do they keep calling him a girl? Matt Patricia, and he has the exact same bizarro tendency to stick the pencil over his ear, you know, underneath his headset, which is what Belichick does. I happen not to like when guys try to wedge writing devices. You know that dude up in Green Bay always likes to stick a Sharpie up in his ear.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
you know, I don't like any of that. Anyway, I don't know why, but I just think behind the ear it gets weird and waxy. So here's the bottom line. Here is that the Detroit Lions, actually, the way they played last night.
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, you got Matthew Stafford, who is one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, even though he plays on a disastrous franchise that has, you know, I mean, it's one of the oldest franchises in football. It has the second longest rivalry game behind the Bears-Packers. Mm-hmm. It's Bears-Lions, right?
Yeah.
So it's, you stop and you think, this is a team that probably has a great history. It really doesn't.
No.
It really doesn't. I think in the war-torn 1940s, they might have won an NFL championship. Okay. I mean, they've really not been a... Their fan base is so rabid, and it's such a, you know, it's a great tradition, and the Ford family. They were showing the woman, you know, who's like their Virginia McCaskey is this woman, I forget her first name, but Firestone Ford. So she was born a Firestone. So the tires
Martha
married
Firestone.
The car.
Mm-hmm.
Martha Firestone Ford.
Mm-hmm.
So the Firestones sent Martha to marry the Fords to make sure that Firestones are going to be on the Fords forever, right? Is that sort of the way that went?
Hey,
the family company's depending on you. Go marry him now.
Apparently, Michelle Michelin wasn't available. What is going on there? I don't know. But anyway, so they showed her, and she's like 90, and she's had I don't know if she's had work done or whatever, but she looked like she was like 30. And I'm like, they're talking about a 90-year-old. They were compared her to Virginia McCaskey.
They did.
Hmm. And Virginia McCaskey was like in the walker, you know, Monday night for the game. And, you know, God bless her. Mm. She's, you know, yeah. She's one of those sainted figures in the Chicago sporting landscape. And, you know, she's having, I swear to God, I thought that Martha Firestone Ford was going to a nightclub after this was over.
She's meeting Violetta and Boris. Right, exactly. I'll be there in 10. Just got to do a couple things.
What the time is Martha Firestone Ford coming to club, coming to Concrete Cowboy?
You have bottle service ready.
You got a booth for her in the back.
I know. She had like these big sunglasses. It was night. She had sunglasses on and she had a cocktail in front of her. I'm like, wow. What's going on there?
Violetta in 70 years.
Yeah, she was. She was like, I want to be with cool grandma. Right, like all the little Firestone Ford children, grandkids are like, I want to be with grandma this weekend. Anyway, it was kind of thing to watch. I think Detroit might actually have something this year.
Yeah, they looked really, really bad in the first 2 weeks, and then boom, you switch and take it to the Tom Brady and the Patriots.
Yeah.
It was a great week of football. I mean, it was
maybe awesome. The Patriots just suck. Is that possible?
Oh, come on.
They always sort of start slow. They get better every week, it seems like. You know, I think they always finish strong.
They do, and you can never count them out, as we saw in the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm. Dolphins, though, 3-0. They're in first place in the AFC East.
I know. There's some weird things happening.
Does anyone feel for Trubisky because of all the comparisons to this Mahomes guy
I don't feel for him.
I feel for him because he's being compared to Rex Grossman.
Yeah, but
that's what I feel for him for.
People need to give that a rest already.
I hear it too much, I think, a little bit.
I don't get it. What's the comparison?
That they could have drafted Patrick Mahomes. They didn't. They drafted Trubisky. Mahomes is having a huge year. It's been like 3 games. Everybody's already anointed him and claimed to be a Hall of Famer, and everybody's calling Mitch Trubisky a bust. That's the gist of it in 10 seconds.
Yes.
And it's exhausting.
It is, and especially for Mitch Trubisky.
And it's a lazy sports media conversation. It just drives me insane.
I love that. I love that criticism. You talk show hosts over at The Score and at ESPN, you're lazy. It's just lazy.
It is lazy.
This is lazy writing right here.
Right.
Well, laziness. We have a lot of sports. They got to cover a lot of time.
It's fun. Yeah, that's true. I mean, we only have a few minutes to discuss it, so it's
right.
Fun for us to right. We can tell the truth because we don't have to belabor the point to get phone calls.
Right. And then yell at the listeners.
Right. Exactly.
Take some shocking position. We should have taken Mahomes.
Right. Shocking position. Just to
discuss.
Just to provoke callers to call. Take right. Shocking position. Then they call and you know, just notice that's how talk radio really went to its excellence in the 80s and 90s.
Yes.
And now look, now we do it in our politics. Yeah. So just imagine what it's going to do to sports.
So what's coming up for the Bears? Are they going to keep winning?
We'll see. Tampa Bay plays tonight against the Steelers, so you're going to be watching that.
I'm scouting tonight. I got my headphones on.
Yeah, put the pencil out behind your ear, Rogan.
I know.
Notebook out.
How are you going to watch Kavanaugh on Fox?
I got it all
like
rolling.
30 TVs
that's true.
Basement,
yeah, that's true.
Set it all up.
I got it all.
What time should we all be over? You guys, right after the show, you free?
I got that thing. It's just going to be me wandering around my basement, looking at all the different TVs. And I'm going to be diagnosing Judge and Mrs. Kavanaugh and whether or not she should have gone left or gone right on that play. Then I'm going to move over.
Who they should have drafted?
Right, to Tampa Bay. Right. Who? Just in case this doesn't work out. Just in case. Kavanaugh ends up being Trubisky. Who should the next draft pick be?
Right, who's the Mahomes instead of Kavanaugh?
You're going to come back to work all turned about.
I know, I'm going to be all confused. Yeah. It was either my option to do that or go to the Emmy nomination party. And if I don't get nominated, I'm going to have a really bad night. If I don't get nominated, I'm watching the Kavanaughs and the Tampa Bays. I'll feel better about myself.
Do you have someone who's going to text you if you do get nominated?
God, I don't even want to do that because then I would find out that I'm not, you know, I just want to find out at work tomorrow.
Okay.
That's what I'm going to do.
Enjoy your evening.
Right, but they'll go, hey, we all got nominated. Except for you, bro. All right, hold on one second. Let's find out what's coming up in the newsroom at the top of the hour. Here's Judy.
Well, the economy may be hot, but the housing market is frigid.
She's Tone on Baseball. Being brought to you by Let Us Entertain You Restaurants.
Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be Shaw's tomorrow afternoon. I think that's the best plan.
Oh, can't go wrong with Shaw's.
Jambalaya. There you go.
All right. Pretty good.
Let's, first of all, a really emotional day at Guaranteed Rate Field. Yesterday, obviously, as Hawk Harrelson retires, and both teams come out to salute him, both the Cubs and the Sox. Very fitting end to his long and illustrious broadcast career, and a these men of baseball, right? And Steve, you were certainly among them. These mm-hmm. Greats who found themselves in the broadcast booth and have made tell the story of baseball. It was a pretty special moment, I think, for the fans. But so fun to see players go out there and honor them.
It was a great thing for the White Sox to do, but we knew that was going to happen, and so Ricky got all those guys out there, and they tipped their cap and saluted Hawk in the booth. It was a very much of a surprise, and I think a very classy thing for Joe Maddon and the rest of his Cubs who did that to also doff their caps and point up to the booth in recognition of just a wonderful career in baseball, both as a player and a broadcaster, and well-deserved for Hawk. He's been around a long time, and those of us who have made this game our lives and been privileged to be able to do that recognize a little bit of something in that particular salute to Hawk and the goodbye that he experienced yesterday. And we were looking at our futures, and that's one of the reasons why I believe it was as emotional as it was, because whether it's Harry Carey, whether it's Ken Harrelson, whether it's Ernie Harwell, whether it's Skip Carey, it ends for all of us at one point. And watching Hawk go through it with his family around, which was wonderful. It was a tough day emotionally for him, a very good day for him, because I think if he was concerned at all about an outpouring of love from the fandom that has supported him all of these years, that was put to rest by the greeting he had before the ball game, during the ball game, and after the ball game. I think it was absolutely wonderful, and it was a really touching moment.
Yeah, and I think brilliant move on behalf of the organization to do it on Cubs Sox weekend, and that rivalry is just obviously it's a legendary rivalry in this town, but in it's fun. It was a very fun weekend at Guaranteed Rate for Sox fans on Friday. It was a ton of fun, except for Violetta, who was besmirched in the hallways and the concourses of Guaranteed Rate. But because people were like, "Hey, you're not really a Sox fan, are you?" And she was trying to be earnest. And then for the Cubs, obviously, and the Cubs, they're going to make the playoffs here, and we'll just see how far of a run they can actually make, because they're kind of banged up a little bit. Should that be a concern?
No, it really shouldn't. What is a concern, and this is a good thing, is that this is a kind of year in both leagues. Look, the super teams, if there are those, are in the American League, not in the National League. So that means really that those real good teams are going to go head-to-head early in those contests in the American League. They're going to knock, a really good team is going to knock another really good team out. I think this is a year when anybody can win it. I think that, it could be the Cubs are a first-round exit. It could also be that they win the World Series. I mean, you start getting good pitching performances, I don't think you have to worry about whether guys are nicked up or not. I mean, they're slowly starting to get healthy on the north side of town. And I just think it was a really interesting weekend. And the reason is the Sox had the opportunity to look across the diamond and see where they want to get. They see a team that, just like the Sox have done, did a tear down and a rebuild. They see a team that got to the pinnacle, won the World Series. They see a team that's been competitive for the last three or four different years. I mean, supremely competitive. And the Sox realize that that's exactly where they want to go. And they realize that the opportunity is there and the players are there. I think looking across the diamond for 3 days and seeing this Cub team and a good team that's headed to the playoffs, I think that carrot that the Sox have as an organization to get better and better and better and ultimately win the World Series, it was right in front of their faces for a three-game series. Two of those games were completely sold out, over 39,000 fans. There was an electricity in the ballpark that you can only have during a playoff a playoff run. The Sox are not going to get theirs for a bit. But the Cubs are headed for theirs. And I think it was a wonderful weekend. I thought it was exciting. I thought it was poignant. I thought everything that is baseball was on display this particular weekend.
All right, Steve, thank you very much. Appreciate it, sir. Steve's down on baseball.
Have a good show.
Thanks. All right. Judy Pilak, standing by in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio in 2 minutes. Oh, Rick James. Wow.
Nice.
It's old school right there.
Mm-hmm. Getting funky in here.
Yeah. Lyrics that today would not pass the test of
would
time.
Not.
No.
Mm-mm.
No. Rick James would be arrested immediately on stage and taken away for violations of Me Too and other high crimes and misdemeanors.
Thank you for using the instrumental version.
Mm-hmm. All right. Shall we now head into the most important duty of the day?
I think we shall.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Four, three, two, one.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna Tavlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
Checking in at
number five.
Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein. Remember, it's Rosenstein, not Steen. It's like Frankenstein, not Frankenstein. Mm-hmm. It's Harvey Weinstein, not Harvey Weinstein.
Rosenstein, Weinstein.
Right.
Not to be confused with each
Correct.
Other.
Correct. However you pronounce his name, he's said to be on his way out as Deputy Attorney General. Now, there was print reports in the New York Times that said that Rosenstein had actually commented with his colleagues about wearing a wire when talking to the president, and apparently in a humorous way talked about the invocation of the 25th Amendment, which would relieve the president of his duties because he's a wackadoodle.
He says it was a humorous way, but there, Andy McCabe, former FBI director, interim director, said no, he meant it.
Mm-hmm.
In his memos.
And Andy McCabe is upset with Rod Rosenstein because Rod Rosenstein fired Andy McCabe.
Yep.
After the McCabe report came out. And basically, you can find anybody on anything. This is what we are learning in the modern era of Washington. If you want to get a guy, there's a million ways to get a guy. He might have maybe texted his girlfriend about something. Mm-hmm. He drunk texted his girlfriend, don't worry about it. We're going to get him. Right? Next thing you know, you're out. I mean, there's anybody who does anything ever, period. Wait, what did you do in high school? What happened? Were you there? She says you are. You're out. Right? It's just an attempt. Everybody is shooting at everybody here because the stakes are so high. It's such a crazy moment.
It's true. Well, the reports were out there everywhere today about him leaving the job, either by will or by the president firing him. But he's still in the job, and I guess they're meeting on Thursday, the president and he.
So Rosenstein should not quit his job, because if Rosenstein quits his job, he can't be used as a witness. He won't be an effective witness. If he is fired, mm-hmm. he can actually be used as a witness in the Mueller investigation. However, Jay Sekulow this morning, the attorney for the president, yeah. who also happens to run a Judicial Watch or whatever it's called. He's got his own conservative judicial mm-hmm. TV station. You know, it's like an internet kind of thing that he does.
Yep.
Said that if they do fire Rosenstein, this would be a good time to put a pause on the Mueller investigation. Should we find out what Mueller's got so far before we do that? Because it's the deputy attorney general or the attorney general who would, if Jeff Sessions unrecused himself, which you could do, and then totally turn, go the other way, there would be, it's up to the Justice Department what to do with the Mueller report. If the Mueller report comes out, it only comes out because the Justice Department lets it out. Mueller can't go out and just drop it and say, here it is. Here's what we got. It's justice that would have to do it. And so whoever would be in charge of the Russia investigation for the Justice Department, the new deputy attorney general, could say, yeah, you know what? Yeah, go ahead, Mueller. Give me that report.
Well,
and
the
then
next
put
person
it in a drawer and lock it up.
In line likely to supervise the special counsel is Solicitor General Noel Francisco, who apparently is a Trump loyalist.
Mm-hmm. Who could then take the could take that Mueller report and go, let me take a look at that. Nothing in here. Thank you.
Pause it.
Yeah, we don't have to put this out. And then the question is, will it get leaked out? Oh. And then who's going to jail for that? And then what happens? Well, anyway, I haven't gotten to the clip here yet because the president
so
was at the United Nations today, and so were the Secretary of State and the Attorney General and his foreign advisors. They were all there, and they were asked, "Hey, what about Rod Rosenstein? Here's the Secretary of State."
I've been involved. I've been at the center of this administration, along with lots of other folks, for from virtually day one. I think it was actually day three or four. I've never heard anyone talk about it, whisper about it, joke about it in any way. No discussion with me about the 25th Amendment anywhere either.
And he said, they kept saying, it's ludicrous to ask your question. Ludicrous to ask your question. It's not ludicrous to ask this question. Mm-hmm. I don't know if anybody's noticed. This is the big story in Washington over the weekend. How about Nikki Haley? Nikki, what do you think?
I have never once been in the White House where that conversation has happened. I'm not aware of any cabinet members that are even talking about that. It is completely and totally absurd. No one is questioning the president at all. If anything, we're trying to keep up the pace with him in the fact that he's got a lot he wants to accomplish very quickly, and we're going to continue to support him in the way that he does that.
Man, that's a little sucking up there right at the end, too. This is totally ludicrous. I can't believe you would even ask that kind of a question. We are working hard for this man because he's just boundless in energy. Boundless. He has so many good ideas. We got to get them all done.
Well, even Rosenstein said that he sees no reason to invoke the 25th Amendment in his defense, saying that it was very sarcastic, if ever mentioned.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm not sure.
I'm not sure either. The New York Times has been working on this for a year. They just a long time. They said months and months. And
all right.
Multiple sources.
And now Democrats are mad at the New York Times, and Republicans are loving them. She tells me that the New York Times is doing a good job because they got everybody mad now. All within the last 2 weeks.
Everybody's mad at them.
Yeah. All right. Checking in at
number four.
All right now. This is the other story that we're forgetting about, this Kavanaugh thing, right?
Huge.
You got the accusers. Now it's been agreed to, I'm assuming, that Dr. Blasey Ford is going to be testifying on Thursday. We do not know if there's going to be a camera for this testimony or it's going to be in closed session. We don't know too much detail about that, but we know it's going to happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the Kavanaughs, Brett and his wife, Ashley Kavanaugh, went on with Martha McCallum on Fox to say this.
Did you guys ever look at each other and say, I'm out. This is enough. This is just isn't worth it.
I'm not going to let false accusations drive us out of this process. And we're looking for a fair process where I can be heard and defend my integrity, my lifelong record of promoting dignity and equality for women, starting with the women who knew me when I was 14 years old. I'm not going anywhere.
It'll be interesting to see. The full airing of this is coming up in a couple of hours on Fox. The question is, does Martha McCallum ask the question, did it happen?
Right. How tough does she get? I mean, apparently there's a lot of, he feels the character assassination part of this, and it seems as if this is devoted to that. The reason he sat down for this is that he apparently says that I was a virgin through high school and college is part of what he reveals in this sit-down. And a lot of it speaks to his character, but you're right, Rhoda. She asked him, you know, can you say that you were not there? Can you say that you don't know her and nothing like this did happen? I mean, does she get very specific?
I'm sorry to bring this up, but the minute you said that he reveals he was a virgin through high school and through college,
uh-huh.
Now there's going to be the race to find someone he slept with.
Oh.
Right? Now there's going to be that.
Just like the Bachelor.
Yes.
Candidate.
Right. So now once again, then some woman will pop up and go, no, that's a lie. He had sex with me. And then there'll be a discussion of what was sex, right? I mean, it's going to turn into that. I promise you, within 36 hours, we're going to be having this conversation about what sex is.
Sex talk.
Yeah.
Please go into detail about your first sexual experience.
Now, exactly what sort of sex was it? And you're like, oh my God. Oh God.
Does sex with yourself count?
Yes, I don't know.
It just, and was this actually an intercourse kind of thing? Or was it, yeah. Shut up!
Because you want to hear those
we're
senators.
Gonna right, about Kavanaugh, right? And it's going to go, no!
You know, come to think of it, I'm not sure it should be public.
Kavanaugh and I had the exact same haircut in high school. That's the only thing I have learned from
you had
this.
That perfect part.
I had that part with the kind of a mid-ear. Uh-huh. Remember, we would have, like, there was the guy was cutting my hair at the time. He goes, all right, we're going to meet theater right there in the middle. You know, I was like, okay, I got it right above the lobe, the little bit of lobe show. I had the whole thing. I had the Kavanaugh. Or the Kavanaugh had the con. Let's go that way. I'm a year older than him, so that's what happened there. All right. Oh, God, we're going to have to find out about this, because I don't know. God knows, in high school and in college. God, I mean, I just think back to my own high school and college. I'm like, oh, my God. What was I doing?
You and Grant DePorter?
I don't want to talk about it. I can't besmirch him in a moment like this.
No, I'm not saying he did anything.
What?
Or are you?
What did we do?
I don't know. I'm not sure you know.
All right. May I just ask right now from Judy what's going on in the newsroom at the bottom of the hour?
A fatal go-kart accident on a Marengo Road.
Division rivals collide tonight on the South Side. White Sox Indians tonight at 7 on WGN TV Sports.
All right, top 5-5 continues. We're up to
number 3.
Oh, my. I thought we'd heard the last from these two knuckleheads. But Mary Kay Letourneau and her husband, Vili Falua Uua.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Perfectly done.
Have appeared on Australian television. And apparently, this is back in the news for some, because they appeared on Australian television. Nobody was really giving a crap about them.
You would think they would want to kind of leave the limelight after what they've right. been through and not be public at all.
This is really interesting. This is, you know, this is a big case from the 1990s. It was a 34-year-old teacher who takes up a relationship with a 12-year-old boy.
Mm-hmm.
Even though he was of Samoan descent, so he was like 6'6 and 240 when he was 12. But she took up with him.
And he was 12.
And then she went to jail, and she got pregnant while in jail. Still can't figure this whole thing out.
But she knew he was 12 because she was the sixth grade. She was a teacher at
right.
that school.
And they appeared on this TV show in Australia, which apparently they care about it down there, too. They appeared on this TV show and with their kids, who are now 21 and 19.
No way.
So think about that. Kapow! How blown is your mind now? But somehow, some way, she's still defending it.
You were the adult.
You can say that.
I am saying that.
I was by age.
And by maturity.
You maybe.
You were a teacher, Mary. You can't say I was immature.
But you don't know him.
No, but I don't need to know him in this discussion. He's the child.
Who was the
boss? I'm talking about you.
Who was the boss? Who was the boss?
What?
Who was the boss back then?
You know,
then?
There was me pursuing you.
Just say? Who was the boss?
All I knew was what I knew back then.
But who was the boss?
He was 13, Mary.
But who was the boss?
It's getting weird.
It is getting weird. Because she's like, who is the boss? And she's the boss telling the underling to say, you're the boss.
She was his sixth grade teacher.
Yes. He was 12.
I'm not sure he was the boss.
Why do we care about them anymore?
I don't know.
Go away!
But they're madly in love. I don't know why they have to sit down and tell everybody about
right,
this.
Right, fine. They're the longest-lasting couple in Hollywood now, other than Sun Yi and Woody Allen. Talk about that!
Yeah, the weirdness never ends.
Right, and Jennifer Garner goes, why can't I keep a man?
And she seems normal.
All right.
Number 2.
LeBron James donned his new apparel. The L.A. Laker... purple and gold. Oh, no. Oh, no. LeBron has a few movies coming out. Space Jam 2, Electric Boogaloo. Who knew we needed a Space Jam 2?
That's kind of fun.
Jordan's better already.
Space Jam 1 was so great. And House Party.
Oh, he's good in that.
So he was up, you know, doing some promotion and reacting to that whole just shut up and dribble thing.
I play ball. That's what I do. That's what I live by. And when I do it at the level I do it at, everything else take care of itself. So, you know, as far as my business, those things have been taking care of itself way before I even came out here to be a part of the Lakers franchise.
Josh Peter with USA Today right here, LeBron. Between the movie project, the TV project, the documentary, the HBO show, how do you juggle off the court stuff and on the court stuff and keep it from becoming a distraction potentially?
How long have you been following me? Huh? Apparently not long enough. There go your answer right there.
Okay. Back at ya.
Yeah, okay.
Media boy.
All right, and finally.
Number
1.
Ricky Gervais stopped by Good Morning America to chat about his game show Child Support, in which you appear with kids. You know, this is the age-old thing. Like, in 1950s television, they used to put kids on TV to say the damnedest things, right?
Yes.
And they'd be involved in game shows. This is the oldest trick in television. That or a monkey you put on TV to have it act like a human. And you're like, whoa, wow, look, a kid or a monkey. I don't know. What's the difference? Anyway, the point is that they're still doing it. He's and now Ricky Gervais is the latest guy to try this.
They are so honest, and it's just so funny just to ask some questions. One little girl just went to me, I can see your bald spot. I went, cheers. And then another one said, are you married? And I said, no, but I've been with the same girl for like 30 years. She went, why don't you propose to her then?
They're both not afraid to say anything. Ricky Gervais, right. And the kids.
Yes.
They kind of connect on that level.
Oh, look, kids will say anything. You know what?
You will too, Ricky.
Yeah, you will too. And so will the president. So it doesn't. This is not a new trick. All right. Can we close this up?
The top five at five.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN. I don't know. There's nothing to see here. There's something going on. I called, as I do now on most days, I called the producer today, Jeff Carlin, our production genius.
Mm-hmm. He
is. A sonic genius and a production genius back there. And I called Jeff, and I'm like, I don't know. Where do we start?
I know.
It's like you can't choose.
Well, and things were moving so quickly this morning. I mean, you really thought that Rosenstein was gone.
Weinstein, Rosenstein. That's how we have to remember it.
I got it right. Good.
But I don't know where to. I mean, was he quitting? Was he not quitting? Was he gonna? What was he gonna do? Was he leaving? There was a moment. This was the strangest television moment of the day. CNN put a camera over a fence to look down on the employee entrance of the White House to see if he could walk by. And the thing is that the angle they had, if someone were walking in, you'd see them for less than half a second as their head darted past this thing because the camera was so far away.
I think
and the
I saw
angle,
a security guard at one point.
Right. It was so obscure. And I kept watching the going, any minute now, Rod Rosenstein is going to walk in here. So I'm like, I'm staring at the TV like a dog, you know, where like I'm on all fours. I'm looking at it. I'm like, is it? And then I see a hand go by. And that looks like his haircut. That could be him. You know?
It's a very popular haircut in Washington, actually.
And then I'm like, why am I watching this television to see what is going to happen? Well, he's already resigned. There were four different reports. He's already resigned. No, he hasn't resigned. No, he's going to resign. No, he's going to quit. He's going to get fired. It's like, what do we make of this? Natasha Karecki is joining us.
She can help us with this.
From Politico. You know and you love Natasha Karecki for her many years.
Oh, yeah.
Reporting here in Chicago, the Chicago Sun-Times, and an excellent political reporter, and then Politico for Illinois, and now national reporter for Politico. And what do we know here about the Rod Rosenstein meeting set for Thursday? It seems to me the smart money here is on him not quitting, because if he gets fired by the White House, that gives him more of an opportunity to take part in a further investigation of the president.
Well, and that's certainly what is being argued now, and there's pressure, in fact, from some Democrats on the Intelligence Committee who are pleading with him not to resign voluntarily and sort of, as you said, sort of force the issue and, you know, make the president, you know, steer the firing here. You know, but as you said, it was just a topsy-turvy day all day long. I mean, it everything this morning seemed to point in a direction that he was heading in and fully expected to be fired, and then things changed. Now,
so this idea, hold on, I want to stop you, Natasha, for a second. So
yeah,
this idea
but,
that he was going to go in and resign appears maybe not to have been the case. The resignation piece doesn't really seem to be on the table, or does it?
It definitely seems like that is less on the table now. I mean, even this morning, I mean, we reported that he was going in with the understanding that he was going to be fired. Mm-hmm. Not that he was going in with the intention of resigning. Once that came out, the possibility of the resignation, given the New York Times report, there was a lot, this stirred up a lot of different strategies, and I'm sure there's been a lot of pressure exerted in different ways.
Yeah, right. Talk about that a little bit, because what does this mean politically if the president does decide to fire Rosenstein after that Thursday meeting that they're going to have, or at any point in the near future?
Well, it allows the president, in his view, to sort of wrestle more control over, he believes, to have greater control over the Mueller investigation. That's what, a lot of top Democratic lawmakers were screaming up and down about and saying, that's what that move indicates. And because of that, they're trying to enact some kind of congressional protections for Mueller to make sure that that doesn't happen. The other conspiratorial thing I'll just throw out there is moving it to Thursday. That's the same day that the Kavanaugh hearing or Dr. Ford could testify, and Trump is a master of playing the media cycle. There could be at the very least some kind of split screen going on here with, whatever bombs are dropped mm-hmm. in that hearing and then Rosenstein's future.
Now, yeah, but that's a very risky play, because that's a double. If he loses the double header there, that's not going to be good, right? I mean, if he fires Rosenstein and Blasey Ford seems credible, and again, we don't even know for sure, do we, if her testimony is going to be on television?
The latest from what I understand is that it will be on live television.
Okay. All right. We haven't seen an official. We're not 100% certain the Senate has decided that yet. She agreed to testify. That was the first piece. And now mm-hmm, the question mm-hmm. is, will it get on TV? Of course, what would be the point of it if this whole thing, if it weren't? But we'll put that aside for a second. If it is on TV and she's credible and he fires Rosenstein, it's sort of like he fired Rosenstein now to try to stop the Mueller investigation. And you have Donald Trump's own attorney this morning saying that if he does fire Rosenstein, they should put the Mueller investigation on pause. Now, if they do that, then it seems, I don't think that America is going to sit here, with the possible exception of really, his most last fervent supporters. I don't think America's going to stop and go, well, this is good government, right? I mean, you're going to have two things not going well for him simultaneously. So he's making a risk here. I think he's hoping to cancel them all out. Maybe Thursday Night Football is going to be really good. I don't think so.
No.
Right. I mean, it is, you just can't imagine. These news cycles are just mind-blowing every day. And even today, it's been like every 10 minutes. You have to keep refreshing your screen and seeing like who's tweeted what, since that's how a lot of the news is happening. But certainly, it's hard to tell how that would shake out. Among Trump supporters, there's a lot of distrust within the Department of Justice, and particularly, the questions around that New York Times story that indicated, that McCabe's memo indicated that there was some suggestion of wearing wire on the president and so forth. So to the extent that you are someone who questions the FBI, who questions Department of Justice and how they're handling some of these investigations, it might not be viewed as so negative if Trump were to get rid of Rosenstein.
Right. That is a minority of the different think groups in America that would go along with that, because there's still a lot of people who are, and no matter what, our last line of defense here in terms of defense of democracy and defense of the rule of law is the Justice Department. And this is a Republican Justice Department, and we all know, anybody who has had experience with the FBI is a conservative group of people. It is not flaming liberals running around trying to tear down the structures of American democracy. It's a very law and order group. So internally, you're already seeing you know, unrest about the kind of pressure they're getting from people that they thought were their own supporters and conservative Americans. All right, I got to play something for you here. Fox has just released another little tidbit of the interview with the Kavanaughs. This is Judge Kavanaugh and his wife being interviewed by Martha McCallum, and the story is already leaked out that Kavanaugh says, listen, I don't know what these people are talking about. I was a virgin through high school and through college.
We're talking about an allegation of sexual assault. I've never sexually assaulted anyone. I did not have sexual intercourse or anything close to sexual intercourse in high school or for many years thereafter. And the girls from the schools I went to and I were friends.
So you're saying that all through all these years that are in question, you were a virgin?
That's correct.
Never had sexual intercourse with anyone in high school?
Correct.
And through what years in college, since we're probing into your personal
many
life
years,
here?
Many years after. I'll leave it at that. Many years after.
So he's defending his reputation here, but I don't know what that necessarily proves, though, because in neither case there was intercourse, right?
Right. But what is intercourse?
I mean, a lot of people are immediately coming back at them saying, you know, that's neither here nor there. This was a forcible attempted assault, as alleged by Dr. Ford, at least. And, you know, so does one have something to do with the other? I don't know. But, I mean, I certainly he's speaking to, you know, his own sexuality and saying he was far more conservative than, you know, people are painting him to be.
I think the real question is, how many beers were you having on average in high school and in college? That'd be the follow-up question I'd have. Because that seems to be the sort of raucous. That's the, if you look at the yearbook and all the rest of it, it's just kind of, he was with a bunch of guys who generally, there's always a group of guys from high school that you don't remember fondly, right? Mm-hmm. And so... You know, was he part of that? Was he a good guy? Was he, you know, those are the questions. And none of that to me is really ultimately in some way, is it going to disqualify you from being a Supreme Court justice when you're in your mid 50s? You know, it's like a different, it seems like a different world to me, unless it was, as described, a force. If she's believable that it was a forced attempted sexual assault, then that could change. But if under questioning, and some of it will be withering, right? I mean, it seems to me that if she doesn't hold up to that, I don't know that this benefits Democrats. And if Democrats go very, very, very hard with the second accuser here now, who is, you know, is even in kind of a more precarious memory situation than is the first, I don't know where this all lands. All right.
You're getting a glimpse, though, with that Fox interview about what he'll be saying on Thursday, because he's saying, I have no doubt that perhaps Dr. Ford was sexually assaulted by someone at some place, but what I know is I've never sexually assaulted anyone, and you can see that that may be what he'll be saying.
All right. We're going to run. We got to run here for the break, but okay. Natasha, thank you very much.
We love you.
Okay. Congratulations on your nationalness. We appreciate it.
Thanks for not forgetting about us back in Chicago. Yeah.
Thanks for taking the phone call.
Okay.
Natasha Gorecki, national correspondent for Politico. All right, let's talk to Judy Pilak, national correspondent for The Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis.
The Chicago Archdiocese is closing schools and churches.
I would like to be extremely happy that the Bears are in first place.
Oh, you should be.
After 3 games of a 16-game season.
Why rob yourself of happiness?
But
why rob myself of joy? That, you know what? You sound like my therapist. But I'm going to rob myself of this joy because I am not 110% sure that what I saw yesterday is a combination of a winning kind of combination that's going to take this team to better than 8-8, which they need to be. Now, I will say this, and Adam Hogue joins us right now from the ballpark. He will be reporting from Halas Hall later this week for us as the Tampa Bays are coming to Soldier Field on Sunday. It's going to be very exciting here.
Yes, it will.
One wonders, however, What do we really have in our arsenal on the offensive side? I see a lot of raw talent. I see just a ton of guys going in the wrong direction. And it doesn't appear to me, and I'm going to start with you, Mr. Hogue, because I didn't like what Kevin said to me just a few minutes ago.
Yeah, I know.
I saw Mitchell Trubisky throwing balls where receivers couldn't catch them. Mm-hmm. Am I wrong?
No, you're right.
I'm right.
He had two really nice throws, the one down the sideline to Trey Burton, the one down the sideline to Allen Robinson. Otherwise, I mean, there were even some completions. There was a slant to Allen Robinson where the ball was too low, and so he had to fall to the ground. He caught it, but it cost him an opportunity to pick up yards after the catch. Look, Mitch wasn't very good yesterday. When I went back and rewatched the game against the Seahawks a week ago, I came away saying, oh, you know what? He was a little bit better than I thought he was live. That didn't happen this morning when I went back and watched yesterday's game. He was just as bad as I thought he was yesterday, which wasn't very good. Now, the big question here is he going to figure it out? Matt Nagy seems to be strongly hinting that right now they just haven't completely picked up the offense, and he still believes that it's going to happen.
What does that mean? I mean, he doesn't know where those guys are going to be, or they don't know where they're going to be, or what?
Well, the one thing we can all agree on right now is that the game is being played too fast for him, right? That clock in his head.
God.
We always talk about
sound
how.
So good.
Well, it's not, because like you look at the way Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady, that's not really fair to compare to them, but they've been playing for so long, it looks like in their brains as they're processing everything, everything's in slow motion. That's right. What the great ones do.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully someday down the road, Mitch gets there, but right now, anytime there's any kind of pressure, it's like, I mean, I don't even know how to explain it. It's just like chaos. You don't know what he's going to do or what's going to happen, and that's the problem right now.
Well, and his pre-snap reads, Adam, I mean, they're telegraphing blitzes, and he's making zero adjustments at the line. Now, what I've been telling Bears fans, look, nobody's been more critical of Trubisky than I have, but he's playing in a brand-new complex scheme. This isn't a simple offense that Matt Nagy runs. It is not simple at all. Okay, I mean, this is an offense that was foreign to him up until a few months ago when OTAs began. So, has he been good? Absolutely not. He has to be better. When you're the second overall pick, you have to be better than what you've shown through 3 weeks here. He's only has 15 career starts. I'm not making excuses for him. Yes, he needs to be better. I was surprised to see yesterday's game because you want to see progression, right? Every single week, you want to see him get a little bit better. Yesterday felt like a step back for him.
Excuse me, I have a question.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I have just one little question.
Yep.
Once you have identified the receiver to whom you're going to throw the ball.
Mm-hmm. You look strongly in that direction.
You've already done. All right, let's even take it to there. Now you have cocked your arm back. I'm almost afraid to say it like that.
Okay.
And you now must throw the ball with the approximate amount of arc and velocity to where you think the receiver is going to be when the ball gets to where you're throwing it.
Very inaccurate, yes.
Right. Isn't that the idea? Isn't that from the time you're playing peewee football and the first time you get to throw a ball, you lead the receiver, right? Everybody says, lead the receiver. Lead the receiver. Don't throw it to where they are. Throw it to where they're going to be. And he was consistently missing that. A couple times underthrowing, but mostly overthrowing.
That's the biggest concern for me, Adam, is that can you... I don't know if Nagy was asked this today, but when it comes to accuracy, right, is it a confidence thing, or is he just an inaccurate quarterback, and how do you get better as a quarterback in accuracy?
No, here's what's happening. It's when he gets rushed, his mechanics break down, his footwork's poor.
Aha!
And he throws the ball inaccurately.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, let me just stop your testimony, sir. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I would like to stop on that moment. His footwork gets bad. The key to throwing the ball accurately in the NFL or in your sixth grade class is to have your feet in the proper position to throw the ball. Am I correct?
You're correct. He's been bad mechanically. Again, he has 15 career starts. This is a process. Can he be better than what he's been?
He's in the NFL!
He's in the NFL.
Well, no, but we're seeing times where when he does all of it properly, when he's not being rushed, he throws a perfect ball down the field.
May I stop the witness again? If you're in the NFL, do you anticipate you're going to be rushed?
Yes.
Yes!
Yeah, but I mean, there's probably a quarterbacks who have been rushed and played really bad in their rookie season. I mean, this is a set, it almost feels like his rookie year, considering
this is rookie season.
It feels like his rookie season, considering he had a bunch of bozos coaching him last year.
It does feel like,
and
that.
he's learning a completely new system. Sorry, Coach Fox, didn't mean to call you a bozo, but it does feel that way.
Yeah.
So I've seen enough from him that says he's got all the tools
to
be a
good
quarterback.
I'm with Kevin. I just feel like this defense is winning the games for now, but just imagine if this offense starts to click, and it's correctable, all this stuff, isn't it? I mean, he's got the athleticism, he's got the ability.
It is until it isn't. And I know that sounds weird, but for some people, the game just never slows down. Now, I agree with Kev. The tools are all there. And as soon as he understands his offense more and he starts to see and get more experience, ideally, yes, it should slow down. But there is always that caveat that, hey, sometimes that never happens. Rex Grossman, it never happened. You can have the talent, and it just never clicks. Now, I'm still going to go in the camp that says it will, but... You know, these first three games certainly have been frustrating. I get it.
Why are guys, you know, I used to say the quarterback isn't a quarterback until he's 26 years old, 4 years in generally in the NFL.
Unless your name is Mahomes.
Right. What? But Mahomes, but also you saw a bunch of rookie quarterbacks step up in the last couple of years,
Mayfield,
right?
Josh Allen. All right. This past week alone.
Yeah, just this week alone, but, you know,
that
last year.
Wentz and Goff last year.
Yeah. I mean, what's. What's happening here? Why are quarterbacks clicking earlier? Is it because they're all going to the IMG Academy beforehand? What's going on?
Well, it's like most times, I think a lot of it's the offense. So these offenses that Goff and Wentz are running right now, that phrase we keep using, RPOs, these run-pass options, they're very friendly to the quarterback as long as the quarterback can read and make the right decisions. So
and not read English. You mean read the defense.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Good. Thanks for the clarification.
Yeah, I'm just saying, because sometimes that is in question in the NFL.
Well, now, I will say, one thing Mitch is doing well is on these zone reads where the option is to, you know, hand the ball off or keep it, especially on those two shovel passes we've seen the last couple weeks.
Now,
he is reading that in the moment well.
Now, that shovel pass, though, that's a little trickification there, and I don't know that we're going to – because once the defense sees that – those players in those positions.
Yeah, but it's an option.
Middle linebacker is going to call that.
Yeah, you're going to see that a lot, actually. That sort of play we saw, I think Philly runs a version of it. That he's got three options there. He can run it, he can hand it off, or he can pitch it out. So I don't think you're going to see that go away. He looks comfortable with that play.
All right.
Yeah, but you did see the Cardinals kind of adjust. Now, they ran it to a different person instead of Trey Burton. It went to Allen Robinson this time, but they almost stopped that.
Yeah.
So
it was they needed 3 yards to get a first down, and they got 2 yards and 13 inches is what they got. I mean, it was by their, you know, the skin of their teeth that they were able to get that. And that scared me because I'm like, oh, wait a second. Because that play should get you 5-6 yards minimum, right? Mm-hmm. Or a guy breaking out. So,
yeah, ideally.
Yeah. It was a little, although I will say this, they did adjust to my screaming at them on Monday night. They must be hearing when I'm in the stadium.
I'm sure they do.
I'm screaming at them. And they did start to run. This is important. Jordan Howard, this is an elite running back.
And he's catching the ball.
Hey, you have to run him and let him use the physical nature. I mean, there's a guy that can drive some people. Please let him play and let him do what he has to do. Can I just go to the other side of the ball real fast here?
Sure.
It's so exciting, though. I got to say that Khalil Mack. I mean, I'd like to marry him, although that never works out well for me or the people I marry.
He is something special. Look, we knew this defense was going to be good, but he has taken them from good to maybe the best defense in the league through 3 weeks.
That's a big statement.
I think they are the best defense in the NFL.
I think they are, though.
I think he's
the best player in the league right now.
Yeah, he's on pace for defense player of the year. I would argue, Adam, that there's a good shot they're 0-3 without Khalil Mack.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and they could have been, and with Khalil Mack, they should have been 3-0.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
After his first game, performance. Yeah.
Don't bring it up.
Unspeakable things that happened in
Green Bay. An unspeakable thing did happen. All right. All right, Adam, thank you very much. I'm going. All right. Can you give a letter grade to what you saw last night?
Ooh. An A for the defense and a D for the offense.
Okay.
Oh. Ouch.
But they still got the win. They got the W, and that's all that counts.
How about an A for special teams? I'll give B because they missed a field goal. But the special teams looks better.
Sherritt McManus had a day.
Oh, man. He was unbelievable. Huge day, you know, even when he was in playing
huge
on the defense.
Yeah.
I just want to say this, though. This Cody Parkey, he's got a name that I do not like. And I'm so worried ever since, you know, Robbie Gold. I don't trust.
No. Robbie Gold, what, a 95% field goal make, Adam, since they cut him?
Yeah, it's been bad.
Want to go see the Hawks home opener? Call number 21 for Stan Mikita. It's going to be a very special tribute to Stan Mikita tonight. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Hawks tickets for you right now for free. Thank you, Adam. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Talk to you.
Thanks,
Adam. Let's find out from Judy what's coming up at the bottom of the hour.
Kavanaugh pushing back.
Traffic brought to you by the Illinois Department of Transportation.